when I was a teenager, the Archbishop of Canterbury sent a special envoy to Beirut to negotiate the release of British hostages being held there. This was right in the middle of what would later be known as the Lebanese hostage crisis. The envoy, Terry Waite, had secured the release of a number of hostages over the previous few years, and as a representative of the Church of England, it was hoped that he would safely do the same thing on this mission. Instead, Terry Waite himself was kidnapped. He would go on to spend almost 5 years in captivity, most of them in complete darkness and entirely alone. While he was imprisoned, he was beaten and tortured physically and mentally. He was chained up, and he was left with nothing at all to engage his mind. He had no access to the outside world and had no idea from day to day what his fate would be. His is an excruciating story of quite incredible solitary suffering. And yet, he would share in interviews after his release, during his time in captivity, his faith in God was unshaken. During these same years, the mid-ish 1980s, I was lucky enough to meet with and hear firsthand testimony from a number of Polish Holocaust survivors. These folks had survived heinous atrocities, witnessed and experienced unspeakable brutality and heart-rending grief. Incredibly for some, these experiences deepened and strengthened their faith in God. Despite the years of punishing violence and mental cruelty and the belief that they themselves would not make it out alive. These stories fascinated me. As a teenager, I was well aware of the often asked question, how could God let this happen? There seemed to be two usual ways of answering this question. Either that suffering is somehow punishment for something bad we've done in the past, or quite simply, such terrible suffering on this scale, like this, proves God doesn't exist. Now, I realize now, in a way that I just didn't then, how this question and these two responses to it are entirely dependent on a particular theology. As a teenager, I was confidently striding into atheism, confidently and quite happily detaching myself from the meaninglessness of the Christianity I had encountered as a child. I was handed a theology with an omnipotent, mighty and demanding and usually quite grumpy God at its center. A God who saw everything and judged everything. A God who rewarded and blessed the good and who punished and made the bad suffer. God was kind of caricatured as a very powerful, all-controlling ruler type, much like the emperors and the kings that were deep in the cultural DNA of the England that raised me. This is what I was rejecting, theology like this. But at that time, it was Christianity that had to go. because I didn't know anything of theology or that there were any other theologies to explore. For every Terry Waite or handful of survivors from the Holocaust or other atrocities, for every one of them that makes it through suffering and stress, perhaps because of their faith, there are many, many more whose faith is blown to bits when life tests them in extreme ways. Theology matters. Our theology matters. Because theology is the way that we organize our thinking about God so that we might get closer to the life-giving divine truth, so that we might know true freedom and be transformed by our understanding. Whatever life's circumstances, God is. But if the ideas we hold about God are insufficient or flimsy, they'll not stand up to great pressures. They'll crack, they'll fall away, and we can find ourselves adrift in meaninglessness, as I certainly did for many, many years. Our theology matters. Whether we're conscious of it or not, our theology is the lens through which we look at the world. The way we theologically reflect on our lives, the wonderful things, but perhaps especially the way we reflect on our sufferings, can lead us toward transformation and ever greater freedom, or it can limit our ability to integrate the truth of God into our own life experience fully. It can keep us trapped in the small, tight space of superficial understanding, which can all too easily get disrupted or blown to bits by stresses and pressures. Paul, St. Paul, was thrown into prison a lot. By all accounts, his life was one of quite considerable suffering. He wrote his letter to the Philippians that we just heard. He wrote that letter from prison. This exquisite letter of love and deep joy in faith was written in the midst of his suffering. Despite his own rather grim circumstances, Paul's letter to the Philippians radiates the gladness of one who has truly come to know God. Having his liberty taken away is no obstacle to Paul's understanding of true freedom. Having his ability to live his worldly life taken away doesn't get in the way of his joy in relationship and community. Now that's a theology. The relationship between suffering and faith is an undeniable part of the Christian story. And all too often, it's framed as some sort of necessary penance for sin, or some kind of justifiable punishment for personal or communal failings. But that's certainly not what's shining through Paul's letter to the Philippians. Instead, what can be sensed here is a refined clarity, a confident theology that's affirmed in his time of suffering. When he's able to perceive with great clarity the truth that remains when everything else, when everything has been stripped away, and that despite his unpleasant material circumstances, or perhaps because of them, this knowing is a source of joy. So if we're not careful, Our strong desires for safety and for comfort can distort our theology. If we're not paying attention, our longing for security and for keeping control of our lives can unknowingly distort our theology. Our fears can unhelpfully be part of the foundation of our theology. In his letter to the Philippians, Paul is showing us something else. He's giving voice to the deep joy of knowing the ever-present isness of God, to be experienced, to be understood, and to be lived from. This is our true source of life and being. Our transient comforts, our times of health or good fortune, youth or wealth. Arguably, all this might actually get in the way of our understanding of God, might get in the way of a confident and life-affirming theology. I absolutely do not believe that suffering is necessary to come to know God. And I hope that we, none of us, ever know the kind of extraordinary suffering experienced by some. But without doubt, there will be times in our lives when we are in pain and when we will look for God. There will be times of suffering when we might fall into the trap of asking why. Why me? Why is this happening? Where is God? Why is God doing this to me? The way that we respond during the hardest times in our lives will reveal the theology that has formed within us during easier times. It will reveal the theology that we might have inherited or soaked up from the culture around us. We might not even realize it's there until it's tested and needed. Theology matters. Our theology matters. And this is a great season to be thinking about theology. We're waiting for the very beginning of the Christian story to begin this year's turn. How might we then intentionally re-engage with our story this year? How might we intentionally wrestle with our understandings, with our theology, in new and liberating ways? How might we come to uncouple true and constant joy in God's presence and the deep peace of God which surpasses all understanding? How might we separate this, uncouple it meaningfully from the features of our own unpredictable and utterly changeable life circumstances? I think this is the way Jesus came to show us, the way, the knowing that saves us, and by which we can all come to know deep joy in freedom and fullness of life. What do you think? Because that matters. Our theology matters.